Indeed, you are, and Barbara Lamb. And we're talking about something that has touched an emotional chord, as it often does with a number of people, from the people who are saying, oh, come on, this is all garbage, don't waste my time with this, to individuals who are ready with their own stories and everything in the middle. My favorite, though, is when someone will say it is just a mind excursion, that none of this exists, because then we get back to non-duality, and does any of this exist? Clearly, these are experiences that, once uncovered through regression, provide more answers than questions for those who have been abducted. And that's exactly the business Barbara Lamb is in. You can check out alienexperiences.com for the book that's coming up. But in the meantime, we left an experiencer, actually mid-flight, shall we speak, and we'll pick her up right there on Coast to Coast AM. Coast to Coast AM. I'm Raleigh James. We've got Barbara Lamb, and we left our frequent flyer in suspended animation there for a moment. And I got to go back before you pick up the story. You were mentioning that her husband had heard the noise, but of course he had known that she'd been abducted before. Now, that's an interesting conversation, too, because I got to tell you, if somebody confided to me that, well, you know, I'm frequently abducted, I'm not really sure that I do would be coming out of my mouth anytime soon. This guy apparently was all right with this. Was this the first time? Was this the first time, though, that he had actually encountered hearing the noise or some sort of proof that, yeah, this is happening?
I think that was the first time that he'd heard the noise or anything, but she had told him before that she was having these experiences sometimes. And of course, without the regressions, for most of those, she just remembered the very beginning or the very end of an experience. But she knew something was happening. And typically, as with many experiencers, she was occasionally having flashbacks, like a little brief memory of something that happened on the craft, or she'd get a little mental picture of the face of a certain extraterrestrial. And so she was pretty sure that she was having these experiences. But she was one of the people who was not traumatized by it. In fact, I've worked with many, many people who have not been traumatized. They might have been a little puzzled and a little confused and wondering more about, well, what really did happen, but certainly not feeling trauma as some other experiencers do.
Which is interesting because, in general, you know, I think most of us would be semi-ballistic at being abducted against our will. So this brings up another question. How are, and we might not know, but how are abductees chosen?
Well, that's the big question. And so often experiencers will say, why me?
Mm-hmm.
So if that comes up in a regression, now here's kind of a strange concept, but it seems to work. If the person is wondering, why are they taking me and why are they doing this particular thing to me right now?
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, well, during the regression, I'll say, well, why don't you just ask them? And they'll say, but I can't move my mouth. I can't talk. And then I'll say, well, that's okay. Just use your mind. Think the question in your mind, because they seem to operate that way telepathically. So if they do that, they always get an answer. And the answers very often are things like, you are a special trainee of ours, or something to that effect. We are taking you because we're inspiring you to do a certain mission on Earth. So there are many of these experiencers who do have a particular mission. I'll give you some examples of these. Some of them will have a mission of doing ecological work. You know, work to really save the planet, or maybe even to save a specific species like whales or dolphins or something. Anyway, they'll spend their life, or they'll use their avocational time doing some kind of ecological work.
Okay, I got a question about that, because many scientists who are certainly heavily credentialed will look at some of the ecological beliefs that are out there right now and look at them as junk science, frankly. They'll say, you know, this is politically inspired. Much of these changes are cyclical. Now, certainly when we're talking about things on the level of nuclear disaster, that's another story. But when we're talking about many of the things that we believe, especially ecologically, if you go back in history, well, it's not that long ago, we thought there was going to be an ice age, for instance. Mm-hmm. And so it would seem to me that some of our basic ecological concerns would be of little interest, while perhaps things, again, like nuclear power and the destruction on that level would be of great interest. Now, are you saying that they're concerned about global warming?
Well, you know, that phrase specifically has not been mentioned in one of these regressions.
Gee, I'm
so
not
far.
Surprised.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised at
but,
all.
But they do talk about saving the planet and the drastic problems that are happening on the planet.
Think they are in terms of, have they enumerated what the drastic problems are?
Well, sometimes they'll sort of split it up into things like water problems, having enough clean water uh-huh. for people, or food problems, or food distribution problems, uh-huh. or helping great masses of people after earth catastrophes. In fact, two or three people I've regressed. One of them was a psychiatrist up in the Bay Area. Said that their mission was to help large groups of people after some kind of catastrophe, helping them in terms of healing. In other words, he was being trained with his ET experiences how to heal huge masses of people at once.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't know anybody who actually knows that they can do that, but that was part of his mission. Or one abductee, her mission, she was told, is to help children who have special problems, such as autism. And she was, when she realized this from regression, she really got to work on helping people with autism. Other people seem to have a mission of informing people about the existence and presence of extraterrestrials.
So there's the one group that we're talking about that are basically saying, we're going to help you do our mission here on Earth for the good of mankind, however that breaks down.
Yes.
Now, is there a group that is using us for their survival?
Yes. And that goes back to what we were talking about a bit earlier about the hybridization program. Now, here are some of the reasons that people have been given, abductees have been given, for why this interbreeding, this hybridization program is going on. And the one that I've heard the most in these regressions is that the beings are trying to save their own race because so many problems have happened to them physically. They become weakened as a stock in various ways, mm-hmm. or they become overly mental and very weak in the physical aspect. So they've told abductees that they need our stock, our physical human stock. They need our genetics, especially they need certain bloodlines.
Now, this would portend that they are coming from some place that at least is hospitable to us, because theoretically our bloodlines wouldn't do them too good if you know, ammonia was their breathing source.
Well, that's right. Yes. So that's very tricky, and how they get around that, we really don't know.
Now, when you mentioned bloodlines, are ETs sometime tracking entire families?
Yes, yes, that seems to be very common. And with almost any experiencer, at least the ones I've ever worked with, if they are an experiencer, they probably have a child who is, and they probably have one parent who is, and they might have a grandparent who is. They might also have cousins, aunts, uncles, and so forth. So somebody else in that family probably is experiencing these things.
Okay. Now, George Norrie loves to talk about time travel. It's one of his favorite things.
I know.
And so the first thing that occurred to me here was, is it possible that these are entities from our future that are going back to look at their earlier bloodlines?
I think that's perfectly possible. I have no way of proving that, but I think that's very plausible and possible. And sometimes they say that they're doing the hybridization because they're simply improving their race. They may not be saving their race in the cases where they cannot reproduce anymore. But sometimes they're improving it. They're getting stronger, sturdier bodies.
Yeah, it all seems to be the physical. It doesn't seem like they're coming because they want to improve themselves mentally with us, which is interesting. Yeah, it's right. It's a nice femur, basically, or
right.
something.
But they do also want to become more emotional. You know, they are fascinated with human emotions.
You've brought up another question that I was wondering about. Now, when the aliens contact us, they do, I guess, from what you're saying, and that inherent in what you're saying, that they understand we're individuals as opposed to either a very limited conscious being like an ant or anything more evolved like themselves.
Yes, so, or a hive mentality.
Right, right. So when they're grabbing one of us, they don't think that we're that individual is representative of all of us? In other words, if I study rats, any rat will do, you know. But
right.
In this, so they recognize our individuality.
They certainly do, and they seem to be quite intrigued with that.
Okay.
But they're also looking for common characteristics of humans.
Right. Right, like emotion. But, of course, emotion varies, as you well know in your line of work, when you're not doing this kind of therapy. Emotions vary right across the gamut.
Oh, yes.
Now, if it's possible, maybe they're coming from the future, but I guess in your work, none of them have stated that they're coming from the future.
That's right. Nobody so far has.
Has anybody, I got a few more things, then I'll let you go.
Sure.
But has anybody stated that they're from here but in another dimension?
Yes, and they appear that way, too.
Tell me about that.
Very often, experiencers will see, like, for instance, will wake up and see a being standing by the bed, and they can sort of see through the being, or the being may be glowing, may seem sort of semi-transparent. And often they will come out of a ball of light, just a glowing ball of light that comes into the room. And then out of that ball of light will come this other being who is also glowing. And then sometimes they're taken by these beings, and the other beings that they join up with in that other location, which, as I said, usually seems to be a craft, the other beings are that way too. Sometimes they're kind of almost wavery looking, like a mirage.
Right.
And so they seem to be from a different dimension. Also, so often these beings will just suddenly be there, as if popping in from a different dimension, and then suddenly, from our point of view, disappearing. Maybe what they're really doing is changing their frequency
right.
and going back into a different dimension.
Which makes sense, but of course those wouldn't necessarily need the craft with them because they wouldn't be going anywhere. They'd just be changing dimension.
Well, that's true. And sometimes the crafts seem to be changing dimensions, too, when there are crafts involved. And, you know, there are many, many sightings that people have had where they're looking up in the sky and just see a regular sky. And then suddenly, in the same place that they're looking, here's a craft. And then they watch it for a little while, and it seems to blink out. Now, maybe the blinking out is that they're changing their frequency and they're going into a different dimensional frequency that we don't see.
Right, and I assume that based on that, that they can decide whether they're going to be detected by us or not. That seems to almost
yes.
be optional there. Now, in terms of people who've been taken on crafts, has anybody been taken to another physical location other than a craft?
Yes. Yes, several of my people have. It certainly seems to them that they're on a whole different planet.
Do they know where?
No, they don't. They don't give names. They are not given names, I
okay.
should say. And but they describe them sometimes. And very often the sky is a different color. The sky might be kind of a bronze color, or it might be more of a greenish color. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the land itself, the topography, looks very different. Now, one of my men, whom I worked with for quite a number of regressions, he used to go very often in his abductions to what seemed to be a different planet, and it had a house on it, well, a building, really, mm-hmm. kind of like a big landscape, fairly plain landscape. But then this one building that had kind of a scalloped edge around the roof. He always referred to it as the clam house, because mm-hmm. it kind of looked like a clam shell. And that's where all the people, I don't know if all the people on the planet, but all the people, well, ETs, that he had anything to do with, that's where they would congregate. And that's where he would be when he'd be taken on a craft by ETs to that particular place. He knew it wasn't Earth.
Right.
Now, another thing, oh, there's so much that I'd love to share, but I'll just pop in with this one. This same man at one point went to a different planet, and he found there a big pyramid and rather dry, sort of brownish ground all around. And in that same area where the pyramid was, he saw blue glass tubes, big, huge ones, like a tunnel, mm-hmm. tunnel size from the Earth perspective. And these blue glass tubes sort of would come out of the ground at one end, travel along the ground for maybe a mile or two, and then seem to dip down into the ground. And these blue tubes had ribs on them every now and then, or probably every maybe 20 feet or something like that. Mm-hmm. Well, that was several years ago. And since then, there have been pictures that James Van Flandern, Tom Van Flandern, a scientist from NASA, he had these pictures from NASA, and one of them actually showed what looked like glass tubes coming out of the ground on Mars. These were photographs taken on Mars. And they had come out of the ground at one place. They had the ribs. They looked like shiny glass, and then they'd go back into the ground. So it's possible that this man, client of mine, was actually taken to the planet Mars. And that probably would have been quite some time ago. But it's so exciting when these things really start adding up, or you get a little validation from some other point of view.
Right. Now, of course, it also could be something that is used universally on planets, but sure, it could be Mars in another dimension. Now, Mars isn't as exciting to me as, say, something that we can't reach, because this raises the question of how'd they get there. In other words, you know, we go out of the Milky Way to the next galaxy or whatever. We're dead before we get there. Mm-hmm. These people are doing it in a blink of an eye. Does anybody have any knowledge on any level with how they're able to get there?
Well, it's been said to a couple of my people that they do it in such a totally different way. Some of them have said they just very quickly can ride on magnetic waves. There are all these magnetic waves throughout the universe, throughout the cosmos. And if they can get into the same frequency, and they apparently are very good at changing their frequencies, they can get into the same vibration, the same frequency as the magnetic wave, then they just whoosh along over huge distances and very quickly. Now, another theory that's been given to one of my experiencers is that it's as if traveling through space is like looking at a tablecloth or being on a tablecloth. And what we would do would be to gather the tablecloth with our fingers, kind of scrunch it together. We're pulling the other end of the tablecloth toward us in that way. So they use that as a metaphor for
folding time.
Treat space.
Right. All you have to do is fold time, and that might be the wormholes and all that.
Sure. Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. Barbara Lamb is with us. She'll spend another half hour with me, and then she'll take all your calls. And yeah, we'll get into implants. I bet a lot of people, Barbara, asking about implants. So
sure. So
be prepared. And also, of course, how many different alien species or races have been categorized? And let's talk about who's malevolent. So far, it's been brightness and light. It can't all be good news. So all that and more will be coming up right here with Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you could, would you? I don't know. I'd probably pass on the trip myself. But most people aren't given the option, which is interesting that so many are coming away saying, yeah, I'm glad for the experience. See, abduction is not on my, top five favorite things to do. But nonetheless, it's happened enough time that the woman who has the information is Barbara Lamb. You can check out alienexperiences.com for her upcoming book. And we are going to find out how many different alien species have been there and what's up with the implants, really. What are they doing? And again, it might be a number of things as well. And of course, we couldn't talk about this without getting to the government as well. Why is this so covered up? Are the aliens running the government? All that and more coming up with Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. It is Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. We've got Barbara Lamb. And all right, Barbara, everybody's asking, what about these implants?
Okay, you know what, Raleigh? I am still suspended in air with our woman.
Oh, I know. I left her right there. And actually, I had so many things to cover. I figured, all right, so give me the salient points on our woman. And we know that her husband's okay with this. And
yeah,
by the way, I've also had people say he went to a UFO where he can a website where he can hear UFO noises. What's this website?
Oh, I wish I knew. I'll have all to right. find out. Sorry. Anyway, this nice woman who was abducted and gone for 3 days. Here she was left suspended for probably at least a couple of days, suspended horizontally in the air with ET standing around looking after her, and beams of light, very thin beams of colored light, different colors, were coming from all directions into her body, penetrating her body, doing some very helpful things in there. And then after it was over, they told her that they had done that procedure because she had a very rare blood disorder, and they were trying to help her, that they couldn't cure the damage that had already been done by that disorder, but they could stop its further development in her so that she wouldn't die prematurely. Now, a few years later, she actually here on Earth went to various medical doctors and was finally diagnosed as having a very rare blood disorder. So she, when she found out about this and the regression of why the progression of that had stopped, which was kind of a mystery, she realized how much she appreciated that the ETs had really helped her with that.
Oh, you betcha. You betcha. Yeah, and, you know, at first when you said a few years later she went to the doctor, but what, a few years later, I'd be there in 20 minutes. But, of course, until the regression, she didn't understand, I assume, what had taken place.
No, she just knew that she hadn't been there for 3 days. And I'm also just wanting to pick up again quickly on the reasons given for the hybrid program.
Yeah.
Okay, I had mentioned a couple, but some of these experiencers have been told that the ETs were trying to, believe it or not, perpetuate the human race in case we destroy ourselves or our planet, which looks like that could be possible, that if we do that, then at least something of us mixed with them could be able to live on their planet. So that would be some way, kind of an odd way, but a way of humans surviving in some form.
Well, that begs the question, are there any planets out there that can host human life? Because the easiest way to perpetuate us is just take a bunch.
Well, sure. Or they could keep that kind of life going on a craft that could be made to have the right kind of environment. You know, with their technical skills, they could probably do that.
It just doesn't sound like much fun.
No, I don't think so.
In terms of that. But now,
probably it's a great view, though.
Well, we hope.
Yeah. Now, another reason given is that they're creating these hybrid beings who could live both here on Earth and there, wherever there is for them, and relate to both cultures. In other words, they could be kind of go-betweens or ambassadors. And another reason is that they're creating superior beings by combining the best of both races, their race and our race. And then some of them give reasons that they're enabling some component of them, the ETs, to live permanently on Earth.
Are any of them doing that now?
Well, reportedly, allegedly, there are some. I don't think I've met any, but I do hear that occasionally, that somebody's met somebody whom they think might be a hybrid. And if their planets fail, you see, because some of them have failed, and some of them could fail, then this mixture, part human, part ET, might be able to live permanently here.
Now, would any of those hybrids, assuming we had some living here, would the hybrids themselves know it?
Boy, I wish I knew that, but there is a woman whom I know named Christiane Quiros, who actually did her academic doctoral thesis on human-alien hybrids.
At an accredited university?
Yes, yes.
Oh. Which one?
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting. It's one here in Southern California.
Oh,
I think
boy.
It's an accredited independent university without walls.
All right, but not like USC. I was going to say, I'd love to see the doctoral dissertation committee on that.
I know. Yeah, this is probably a more liberal one. But anyway, she had to really research this, and she put out all kinds of requests and various publications for anybody who thought they might know a hybrid living on Earth or a hybrid himself or herself. And she met with, I think she found about 8 people around the country and went and interviewed them and built a pretty good case that maybe they really were half human and half ET.
The 8 she found, did they know it? In other words, these were people conscious of their status?
Yes, apparently they did. Yes.
Interesting.
You know, that brings up another whole topic, which is walk-ins. I don't know
yeah.
if you've heard that.
Oh, yeah. I know about walk-ins.
Yeah. And I've worked with 2 people whom I truly believe were walk-ins.
Uh-huh.
And I've met and talked at great length with another one. Anyway, they did have a life as an ET, allegedly. And then they made a soul exchange with somebody here, somebody, a human who was, for one reason or another, was going to die.
Right, ready to go.
Yeah. Not necessarily ill, but for whatever reason, they were going to die, and they made the soul agreement that the other one, the ET one, could come and take their body and live in their body. And since that exchange happened, the original person changed dramatically. You know, changed into
yeah, walk-ins always do, sure.
Yeah, and then the walk-in kind of gets on eventually, you know, has a period of adjustment here, but then gets on with whatever their agenda is. So that's just another whole very interesting topic that we could go into in great detail, but I know that we have other things to do.
Yeah, but I do want to ask something about this, because normally when you think about walk-in souls, and for people who have never heard of it, look it up. All right. because otherwise it takes too long. But that said, we normally think of the soul exchange being somebody who is disincarnate at the moment, somebody who does not have the corporeal vehicle. Now,
right.
Of course, if the ETs are disincarnate at the moment, well, you know, that they might as well be people who'd been, I guess, how do I say this, who had been, had a reincarnational history on another place, but they're disincarnate now.
Yes.
In other words, if I have past lives, some of them might be on another planet, theoretically, correct?
Yes, yes, that's
all right.
True.
So the walk-in that you're talking about, was this ET disincarnate at the moment, or are we saying that the walk-in said, I'm leaving my ET body, my corporeal ET body, to go inhabit this Earth body?
Yeah, the ones that I've worked with and know about personally, they were corporeally ETs and
right.
then left that body to come in to a human body.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then that was the end of the corporeal ET body.
That's right.
And the wake that it might have left, but also the ability that it had to rationally discuss that. We could be here all night. All right, so implant, and it'd be fun, but implants, a big one. Because we see very often somebody who specializes in removing them. So what are they, from whence they come? Are they different for different species of ETs with different purposes? What's the deal?
Okay, first of all, Dr. Roger Lear mm-hmm. has done various surgical removals. I've been at three of them, so I've actually seen them firsthand. There really are these objects that come out of bodies. I think he's going to do his 14th surgical removal very soon. Anyway, they do exist, these implants, and some of my people have said that they seem to feel that the implants that they have are to sort of track where they are, to sort of monitor them so that the ETs can find them no matter where they are.
Do they all have them?
They may not all, but certainly a lot of them do. Yeah.
Okay.
And then sometimes people feel that with the implant in them, they're getting messages from the ETs who work with them. Sometimes they feel they're being influenced by the ETs who work with them. And sometimes the ETs will give off a vibration or a sound or like a little movement inside the person, and it seems to be a little harbinger that another experience with an ET is going to happen.
Okay, like meet me behind the shed out back. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like I'm coming.
Yeah, right, right.
They also, when an experience is going to happen, people frequently will hear sounds. Each person might hear a different sound, but it could be a whirring sound, a whooshing sound, a clicking sound, a buzzing sound, a high-pitched sound, unusual pulsing, or sometimes they may feel a vibration coming toward them okay. or a vibration around them or in them. And another clue that an experience is going to happen is that suddenly the person will feel as if they're in a vacuum, like the whole world has suddenly stood still, and there's no sound, and there's no movement, and then the experience unfolds. So that would tend to be a daytime experience.
In terms of the different species or races that are coming here, are they coming in an official category from wherever, like, say, a government agency rep, or are these some interstellar kids out for a joyride? Do we have any idea what level of responsibility those who are conducting these abductions have?
It seems to me that they're more of a scientific type, many of them, not a government type. I've never been aware of any saying I'm a representative of such and such a government on such and such a planet. But they do seem to be studying human beings in many, many ways. And they seem, some of them, to be educating and training certain human beings. In fact, often they will take a human being to what appears to the person to be a classroom, or maybe a library or a right. temple in some cases. But in any event, it's an area of learning. And there are ETs there of different types who are sort of watching the person sitting in a chair, sitting at a monitor, which reminds us of a television or maybe a computer monitor. And they're watching the human being as the human being is learning whatever that particular subject is that the ET wants the person to be learning.
Okay.
This has happened with many, many of my regression clients.
Have any of the abductees at any point, and this would probably not be in a regression but found out later, been investigated or interrogated by any government agency or even global government agency?
No, I'm not aware of that's happening, but sometimes these experiencers do have the occasional experience where it seems like there are human beings involved.
Right. That was my next question. You know, sometimes the men in black come around and clean things up. And I got a couple questions. You know, firstly, you're saying no to their knowledge. It's not the government. Is there any chance that the men in black are not from the government, but are in fact aliens themselves?
Oh, yes. I've been thinking that for years, that they're not human beings. They masquerade as human beings.
Okay.
But they have really different properties, and sometimes their energy seems to run down, and it seems like they're operated by a battery, and the battery gets lower and lower, and they get slower and slower and drag themselves to the door and almost fall outside.
Then with that in mind, and that really gets to the heart of, I guess, my biggest curiosity about this stuff, which is clearly the men in black are a cleanup act that don't want any remnants of them there. Now, assuming they might be aliens, why do the aliens not want us to know, us as a group?
Well, you know, when you consider how violent and warlike and weaponized the human race is, or at least certain components of it, they are at risk, I think, of being shot down when they come close. I think it's definitely to their interest to be very covert about showing themselves.
Well, I would think that they could neutralize us in an instant if it was, you know, their survival in mind. But you also have the same attitude from the government itself, whether it's an airline pilot who sees a UFO and then is backed up by NORAD for like a day, or the Mexican Air Force, you know, seeing something and then you never hear about it again. And we could go on and on all like that. And of course, the final outcome is always silence or denial. Why is our own government, and all the governments, I guess, intent upon keeping this a secret? Are the ETs in bed with them and saying, don't tell?
I don't know, but I don't think so. I think it's more an agenda on the part of the governments that, you know, governments are supposed to be able to protect their people and have control over things. And if this news comes out, then it looks like the government cannot control it. And they cannot stop it. They can't prevent it. So they're going to look more powerless to the constituency. So I think it has a lot to do with that. There's a lot of speculation about how people would, or they expect people would just come unglued if they knew that this is a real, bona fide reality. And you know, there'd be those who'd want to protect us and shoot them down, or at least have a war.
Sure.
Boy, who knows? There are just lots of reasons.
Right. I can see that, and I can see the efforts to deny, which, of course, brings up somebody like you, who is a credible figure, again, degreed, credentials, doing a marriage and family counseling and other things like that. And here you are pretty much validating something that the forces that be would want to make invalid.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever been marginalized by any official entity? In other words, the easiest way to dismiss Barbara Lamb is to call her a kook.
Right.
Is that happening?
No, but there was one sinister man who was at one of the MUFON meetings, Mutual UFO Network meetings, and he had heard me speak the previous month. And so he came up to me and after the subsequent meeting, and he wanted to know all of the details of my contact information and how did I keep my notes and where were they.
Ooh.
And oh, he was a tall man with steely, cold, icy blue eyes. I just felt sinister, sinister.
Do you think he was an alien?
Boy, you know, I wondered. I don't think so, but it certainly has crossed my mind. But I think he was more aligned with the forces that want to keep this whole subject
undercover. No robbery since then or anything like that?
No, thank goodness. And no men in black have visited me.
Good.
I'm glad, because I don't think that would be a very nice experience.
Guaranteed. Now, all the various alien species or races, are any truly malevolent who are just here because they want us for lunch?
Well, I've never run into that, but clearly it seems like some of the races of ETs are more self-serving The little grays seem to be self-serving, although I think that they're working for somebody else. They're kind of the little robot almost. They're the ones who very often will come and take people, and they'll do the implants and the physical exams and sperm extraction and egg extraction, that sort of thing. And they don't seem to have very much responsiveness or anything.
All right.
I wouldn't call them evil or malevolent. The reptilian types, and there are a lot of different reptilian types, they seem to be more self-serving.
All right. I'll leave the reptiles right there, and we'll come back with reptiles of our own. Guest Torture, your call's next right here on Coast to Coast AM.